Us wound up in Elkins or Torv's sectors, leaving Mara little to do except help watch for any surprises the pirates might have left behind, wait patiently for them to clear the asteroid field, and wonder darkly if Luke was deliberately being overprotective just to annoy her. It was on one of her visual sweeps of the sky ahead that she spotted the ship. Her initial thought was that it was a TIE fighter. It was similarly sized, and at first glance had something of the same silhouette. But even as she opened her mouth to alert the others, the craft made a turn.
"We've got company," she snapped, "poking near the edge of the asteroid field at about 20 by 50.
"Got it,"
Fawn said.
"Looks like... what does it look like?"
"You got me," Mara said. "I thought it was an Imperial, but those aren't TIE solar panels on its sides."
"Whatever they are, it's got two more of them flaring aft at the tail,"
Elkin pointed out.
"Doesn't necessarily mean it's not an Imperial,"
Fawn grunted.
"Skywalker, you up on current Imperial starfighter design?"
"Not really,"
Luke said, his voice showing signs of the strain as he was forced to split his attention between the intruder and the more immediate task at hand.
"I've never seen anything like that before, though."
Mara gazed out at the distant spacecraft. Clearly it was watching them. Did it realize they'd spotted it?
"I think one of us ought to try for a closer look," she said.
"Let's not, shall we?"
Fawn growled.
"We don't need to borrow any more trouble than we've already got."
"Besides, with our luck, it'd just be another of those useless Keller things,"
Corvus added scornfully.
"Like the one Lando Calrissian chased all over space."
"I say we take a look,"
Mara said, putting the firmness in her voice that made it an order.
"Luke, you're the faster ship. You want to see if you can catch it?"
"I can try,"
he said, an odd tone to his voice. Was he feeling the same thing about that ship that she was?
"Can you spare me?"
"I think so," Mara said. "We have to be pretty close to the edge of the pirate's defense sphere by now."
"Okay. R2, get all the recorders and sensors going. We're going to want a complete record of this."
The droid beeped acknowledgement, and with a suddenness that surprised even Mara, the X-Wing angled off and shot toward the intruder. It dodged past the drifting asteroids, cutting close beside them for the maximum of cover. Mara kept her turbolaser targeted on the other spacecraft, wondering tautly whether they would choose to fight or run. But the X-Wing was still closing, and so far there was no reaction. Could the intruder somehow be looking the other direction? Ridiculous. So what was it waiting for? Luke was nearly to close combat distance now. Behind him, a stray asteroid floated leisurely between the intruder and Mara's line of sight. Her only warning, a sudden jolt in Luke's emotions. An instant later, she caught a single glimpse of the intruder as it flicked at incredible speed across the sky, making for the edge of the asteroid field.
"There he goes,"
Torv yelped, as Mara tried to swing her turbolaser around to target the distant spacecraft. But too late. Even as she fought to get a lock on it, another asteroid cut across between them, again blocking her view. There was the flicker of pseudo-motion from the asteroid's edge, and the ship was gone. Someone on the intercom swore softly.
"I give up,"
Fawn said.
"What the blazes was that?"
"You got me," Mara said. "Luke, you still there?"
"Right here,"
Luke replied.
"Did you get all that?"
"Only part of it," Mara told him. "He waited until we were blocked by an asteroid before making his move."
"Interesting,"
Luke said.
"The ship gave off a very unusual energy signature as he took off. I recorded what I could of it, but I doubt my sensors were able to pick up more than a fraction of what was really there."
"Maybe that's why he waited until we couldn't see him."
"Probably. He'd have guessed a ship your size would have better sensors than mine."
Mara rubbed her lips.
"Well, unless you want to follow his hyperspace vector, there's not a lot we can do about him right now. How about feeding us what your sensors got?"
The astromech droid made a rude sound.
"It's all right, R2. We can consider this their rescue fee."
part of their rescue fee, Mara corrected. We'll settle on the rest later.
Understood,
Luke agreed.
Here it comes.
Got it,
Fawn said. Thanks, Mara said. You need anything else, Luke?
Not at your prices. Seriously, thanks for everything.
Glad we could help, Mara said. Don't forget to have those injuries looked at.
I won't,
he assured her.
R2's already pulling up a list of the nearest New Republic medical facilities. See you later.
Right. Watch yourself.
The comm clicked, and with a flicker of pseudo-motion, the X-Wing made its jump to light speed.
Mara gazed after it, a strange mixture of emotions chasing each other through her mind.
The glowing reports she'd read of Luke's glorious achievements, and yet they were a far cry from what she'd seen him do just now. Had something happened to him? Or was he finally coming to his senses?
Jade?
Fawn asked.
What now?
Mara exhaled softly, putting Skywalker out of her mind.
We shoot a report off to Card,
she said, doing a quick time calculation.
See if he wants us to get back on schedule for the Noskin rendezvous, or else try to track the pirate's escape route.
Right. Incidentally, Jade, in case no one's ever mentioned it before, you and Skywalker make a pretty good team.
Mara gazed out at the drifting asteroids.
Bite your tongue, Fawn, she said softly. Bite your tongue.
Chapter 10.
It was a hot day in this part of Dordolum. Hot and sunny, with an oppressively still and heavy atmosphere that seemed to wrap around the silent lunchtime crowd like a wet grove fir blanket. The speaker currently shouting at the crowd from his perch atop the stand of public expression was adding to the heat, too. But unlike the weather, his heat was a fiery one, a mixture of words and thoughts and stage presence carefully designed to inflame the emotions and stir up the dozens of long simmering resentments represented out there today. Practically everyone listening to the diatribe harbored at least one such quiet grudge, whether it be Ishori toward Diamala, Barabels toward Rodians, or Aqualish toward humans. Or almost everyone toward Bothans. Letting his eyes drift across the crowd to the elaborate sign of the Bothan-owned Sulfuran Shipping Company, directly across the plaza to their right, Dren Navit permitted himself a private smile. It was a good day for a riot. The speaker had made it to his main topic now, and as he hammered in graphic detail at the horror that had been the destruction of Ka'amas and the Bothan's cowardly and loathsome role in it, Navit could sense the crowd's anger finally edging toward the mindless fury that he'd been waiting for. Slowly, careful that his movement not break the spell for those around him, he began drifting toward the area closest to the shipping company. Cliff might be a genius at demagoguery, but it was he, Navit, who knew how to gauge a crowd's mood and pick the right time for action. Almost there. Navit was in position now, within easy targeting range of the shipping company. Dipping a hand into the bag, hanging unobtrusively at his side, he withdrew his weapon of choice and waited. Another few seconds, and now.
Justice for Ka'amas!
He shouted.
Justice now!
Cocking his arm over his shoulder, he spun and hurled at the Bothan building. And right on target, the overripe blitchy fruit hit the door, splashing with a sickening thud and leaving a brilliant red stain behind. There was a startled gasp from a couple of Duros standing nearby, but neither they nor anyone else in the crowd was going to be given enough time to think about what they were being suckered into here. From a half-dozen other places in the crowd, the cry for justice was echoed, and a half-dozen other pieces of fruit splattered the building.
Justice for Ka'amas!
Navit shouted again, hurling another blitchy fruit.
Vengeance for genocide!
Vengeance!
Someone picked up the call.
the cry accompanied by more of the nuisance missiles.
Vengeance for genocide!
Navit threw another blitchy fruit, and another.
And then from somewhere, an alien voice called hoarsely, echoing the call for vengeance. And as if that were somehow a signal, the crowd suddenly and gratifyingly collapsed into a mob. A rain of foodstuffs began to pelt the building, drawn from lunch bags and cartons and propelled by the mindless fury and pent-up rage that Cliff had so skillfully stirred up in them. A rage that Navit had no intention of wasting on a few fruit stains. Reaching past the last blitchy fruit in his bag, he pulled out a rough stone. Violence begets violence. He silently quoted the old maxim and let fly. It hit its target window dead on, shattering the plastic with a crash that could barely be heard above the roar of the mob.
Vengeance for genocide!
Navit shouted, waving his fist at the building and pulling out another stone. The crowd were fast learners. The rain of fruit and eggs continued, but it began to be joined by some of the edging stones that lined the plaza's walkways and flower beds. Navit threw another stone as four more windows became jagged holes, then took a quick moment to search the skies around them. Even taken by surprise this way, the Dordol authorities wouldn't take forever to respond. And there was the expected response now, rapidly approaching from the direction of the spaceport. Three brightly colored customs airspeeders with an escort of maybe half a dozen speeder bikes. Moving fast, too. They'd be at the plaza in less than 2 minutes. Which meant it was time to go. Slipping a hand inside his tunic to his hidden comlink, Navit tapped the call button twice. The signal for the rest of his agitation team to move to the edges of the mob and vanish into the afternoon sunshine. Then, reaching past the last two stones in his pouch, he pulled out his final present to the Bothans. It was a grenade, of course, but a very special grenade. Navit had personally taken it from the dead hand of a Myomaran resistance fighter 10 years ago, during the Empire's brief reoccupation of that world under the meteoric reign of Grand Admiral Thrawn. What made this particular grenade so useful was that that resistance cell had somehow talked a visiting Bith into designing their weaponry for them. When the remains of the grenade were studied, as they most certainly would be, the New Republic would be forced to the conclusion that even the generally pacifist Bith were beginning to join in on the side of the anti-Bothan sentiment. Perhaps that wouldn't matter. Perhaps none of this really mattered. Perhaps the aliens and alien lovers had so beaten down the Empire that nothing Navit and his team did could make any difference anymore. But as far as their duty was concerned, such possibilities didn't really matter either. Navit had seen the glory of the Empire, as well as its darker days. And if that glory couldn't be revived, then it was only fitting that he helped bury it beneath the ashes of the New Republic. Pulling the safety, he flicked the detonator and threw. The grenade dropped neatly through one of the broken windows on the upper floor and vanished inside. He was halfway to the edge of the crowd when it went off, collapsing the roof and sending a spectacular fireball roiling into the sky. He was out of the plaza and walking unconcernedly down the street with the rest of the noonday strollers when the authorities arrived at the scene of the fire. The petition scrolled to the end past the long list of signatures. Leia looked up from her datapad, an ache in her stomach. No wonder President Gaverson had looked so solemn as he ushered her into his private office.
"When was this delivered?"
she asked.
"Ooh, approximately 1 hour ago," Gaverson said, the tips of his wings brushing restlessly across the stacks of data cards that awaited his attention. "Under the circumstances, I thought you and Counselor Phalia should be given advance notice."
Leia looked at Phalia. The Bothan was hunched in his seat, fur pressed completely flat against his skin.
"Why me?"
she asked.
"Because you were the one who found the Karmas document in the first place," Gaverson said, flicking his tail in a Calabop shrug.
because like the Kamasi, you've had a world destroyed from underneath you, and can therefore understand their plight better than most. Because as a revered hero of the battle for freedom, you still have a great deal of influence with the members of the Senate. Ooh.
I can't match the influence of these signatures, Leia warned, gesturing toward her datapad. Besides, she hesitated, looking again at Phalia. I'm not sure I don't agree with them, that this is a reasonable compromise.
A compromise?
Phalia asked, his voice dead.
This is not a compromise, Counselor Organa Solo. This is a sentence of ruin for the Bothan people.
The three of us are alone in this room, Counselor Phalia,
Gaversum reminded him mildly.
There's no need for rhetorical hyperbole.
Phalia looked at the Calibop, his eyes as dead as his voice.
I speak neither rhetoric nor hyperbole, President Gaversum,
he said.
Perhaps you do not comprehend how much time and effort would be involved in even merely locating an uninhabited world that would be suitable for the remaining Kamasi.
His fur rippled.
But then to further insist that we bear the costs of reforming that world to Kamasi's original specifications, we cannot possibly afford such an undertaking.
Ooh, I'm familiar with the likely costs of such a project,
Gaversum countered, his tone still patient.
It was done at least 5 times during the Old Republic.
By peoples arrogant in their power and their wealth,
Phalia snapped, suddenly seething to life.
The Bothan people have neither such power nor such wealth.
Gaversum shook his mane.
Ooh, come now, Counselor, let us be honest here. The current state of overall Bothan assets is quite adequate to cover such a project. Certainly, it would be a serious sacrifice, but not a ruinous one. I would further suggest that it represents your best chance of resolving this matter quickly and peaceably.
Phalia's fur rippled stiffly across his body.
You do not understand, he said quietly. The assets you speak of do not exist.
Leia frowned. What are you talking about? I've seen the market reports. There are whole pages of listings of Bothan holdings. Phalia looked her in the eye.
They are lies, he said. It is nothing more than a cleverly contrived datapad illusion.
Leia looked at Gaversum. The other's restless wings had suddenly stopped moving.
Are you saying,
the Calibop asked carefully,
that the leaders of the combined Bothan clans are engaged in fraud? Ooh!
The Bothan's rippling fur became even stiffer.
It was to be only a temporary deception,
he said, his voice dark with pleading.
As our financial troubles themselves are only temporary. A grip full of bad business decisions that has drained the combined clans of their resources and left us deeply in debt. And then this controversy arrived, causing even more uncertainty. New investors and contacts were needed, and so...
He trailed off.
I see,
Gaversum said. His voice was still calm, but there was an expression on that long face that Leia had never seen there before.
Ooh, you put me in a most awkward position, Counselor Phalia. How exactly do you suggest I proceed?
Phalia's violet eyes met the Calibop's pale blue ones.
We can recover, President Gaversum. It will just take a little time. Premature revelation of this information would be devastating, not only for the Bothan people, but also for those who have invested with us.
Who have trusted you?
Gaversum corrected coldly. Phalia's eyes slipped away from that accusing glare.
Yes, who have trusted us.
For a long minute, the room was silent. Then, rustling his mane again, Gaberson looked at Leia.
Fool! You are a Jedi Knight, Counselor Organa Solo, he said. As such, you have the wisdom of the ages and the guidance of the Force. I would ask your recommendation.
Leia sighed.
I wish I had one to give, she said.
Have you made any progress in the search for the names of the Bothans involved with Kar-Mars?
Not yet,
Leia said.
Our intelligence people are still working on the original data card. But Crypt Chief Gent tells me we already have everything we're going to get from it. We're also searching through the old Imperial archives at Camparis, Bodolais, and Abroa Sky. But so far we haven't found anything.
It was probably kept in the special files section. Oh,
Gaberson said, with a whinnying sigh.
The records Imperial forces were ordered to destroy before retreating.
Probably, Leia said. We're still hoping a copy somewhere might have survived.
A small hope, though.
Yes, Leia had to concede. Thalia, how much time will the combined clans need to get back on their feet?
The current projection is to have our major debts retired within 3 months. But at that time, we will still be far from the financial position we are currently thought to be in.
Gaberson made a noise deep in his throat.
And how long until you'd be able to take on this kind of project?
Leia asked, tapping her data pad. Phalia closed his eyes.
Perhaps 10 years. Perhaps never.
Leia looked back at Gaberson.
I wish I could offer you advice, President Gaberson, but at the moment I can't see a clear path here.
I understand, Gaberson said. May I encourage you to meditate and seek further guidance through the Force?
I'll certainly do that,
Leia assured him.
The one thing that is clear, though, is that the Bothans aren't going to be able to meet the demands of this petition anytime soon.
Indeed, Gaberson said heavily. I'll have to attempt to buy some time.
How? By offering it for debate?
Leia asked doubtfully.
That could be risky.
More than merely risky, Gaberson agreed. If someone decided to bring it up as an official bill, the full Senate could end up ratifying it. At that point, I would have no maneuvering room at all.
Leia grimaced. No room for Gaberson, and even less for the Bothans. They would then have to go ahead and create a new homeworld for the Ka'amasi, or face the consequences of defying New Republic law.
But as you know, the President is not entirely without resources,
the Calabop continued.
And there are certain parliamentary tricks that can be applied. I should be able to hold this up for a while.
Leia looked at Phalia.
But not for the next 10 years.
No.
There was another brief silence.
Well?
Gaberson said.
There seems to be little we can do right now, except for one thing. I want the combined clan's financial records examined to confirm that the situation is indeed as described. Counselor Organa Solo, would you be willing to travel to Bothawee for such a purpose?
Me? Leia asked, surprised. I'm not a financial expert.
Yet you surely must have been taught the basics by your father, Bail Organa, when you were younger,
Gaberson pointed out.
The basics, yes, Leia said, but that's all.
That will be all you need,
Gaberson assured her.
The trickery will be in the falsified documents, not the true ones.
He gestured to Phalia with one wing.
She will be allowed to see the true ones, will she not?
Of course,
Phileas said, his fur rippling unhappily.
I'll alert the combined clan leaders you will be coming.
You'll do no such thing,
Gaversum said firmly.
They are to have no notice whatsoever.
Phileas' eyes flashed.
You insult the integrity of the clan leaders, President Gaversum.
You may see it any way you choose,
Gaversum said.
But they are to have no advanced warning. And do not forget that Counselor Organa Solo is a Jedi Knight. If your clan leaders are not genuinely surprised by her arrival and request, she will be instantly aware of it.
Leia kept her face expressionless. In point of fact, she'd always found the average Bothan somewhat difficult to read, and wasn't at all sure she'd be able to tell if the clan leaders had been tipped off. But of course, Phileas didn't know that.
I understand, he muttered. When do you wish her to leave?
As soon as possible,
Gaversum said.
Counselor Organa Solo?
We could probably leave within a couple of hours,
Leia said, running quickly through a mental list of the necessary arrangements. Han would want to come along, of course. Come to think of it, it would be a good chance for the two of them to have some quiet time together.
Chewie and the Nogri can watch the children here for us.
The Nogri,
Phileas murmured, an edge of bitterness to his voice.
They should have killed that Deveronian on Wayland. Then none of this would have happened.
The Deveronian did nothing deserving of death,
Gaversum said quietly.
And there has been far too much killing throughout the galaxy already.
With more yet to come,
Phileas countered darkly.
Would sacrificing one life to prevent it have been such a bad bargain?
That is a question all beings eventually ask themselves,
Gaversum said.
For those who wish to remain civilized, there can be only one answer.
He settled his wings back into resting position across his withers and back.
Thank you both for coming, counselors. I will speak with you again later.
Moff Deesra laid down his datapad.
Very satisfactory, he said, looking at the others. It all seems to be going quite well.
It all seems to be going quite slowly, Flim countered sourly, leaning back in his seat with his feet hoisted up on a corner of Deesra's Evroy desk. We have what? A few pirate raids and maybe 100 riots to our credit?
Patience is a virtue,
Tears reminded him.
Even for soldiers, especially for soldiers.
Ah, well, that must be the problem, Flim countered. I'm a con artist, not a soldier. But I can tell you that in my world, you can't afford to string things out too long. You have to hook the target, taut the line, and then boat him. Zip, zip, zip. You give him too much time to think, and you'll lose him.
We're not going to lose them,
Tyr soothed.
Trust me, this is a delicate stew we're creating. It merely needs to simmer a bit longer.
Then maybe you should turn up the heat a little, Flim said. This is my greatest role ever. And so far the only people who've seen it have been the two of you and four Star Destroyer captains. When do I get to really show it off?
Keep it up, and you may not get to show it off at all, Deesra told him,
trying hard to hold on to his temper. Flim was starting to show all the eccentricities and quirks of a self-important stage entertainer, a personality type Deesra had always despised.
Don't worry,
Tyr soothed.
You'll get your chance for at least a private performance for the Rebels, but not until we know where it will do the most good. We need to know which alien governments are for heavy sanctions against the Bothans, and which are for forgiveness and peaceful conciliation.
Which means you'll probably be showing off for a Mon Calamari or a Duros, Deesra growled, glaring under his eyebrows at Tierce.
This particular scheme was one of the guardsmen's latest brain twists, and Deesra still wasn't at all sure he approved of it. The whole idea here was to use Flim to quietly inspire their Imperial forces, not scare the New Republic into coming down on their heads.
Actually, the time is much closer than it looks,
Tierce went on, ignoring Deesra's comment.
Our spies on Coruscant have heard rumors of some petition that's been filed with the President. If they can get hold of a copy and circulate it publicly, that should speed up the process. A few more days, I think, and we'll be able to move on to the next phase.
I hope so, Flim said. Incidentally, I presume it's occurred to you that there's a very simple way the New Republic could resolve this whole crisis and cut the ground out from under us.
Of course it has,
Deesra said with strained patience.
All they need to do is find out which specific Bothans were involved with Palpatine's agents on Ka'amas.
And you've taken steps to prevent this from happening?
What do you take me for, a fool? Deesra snapped. Of course I have. The only intact set of records is here on Bastion, and I've already dealt with them.
Actually, that's not entirely accurate,
Tyr said thoughtfully.
The records at the Ubiquitrate base on Yaga Minor may also contain a copy.
Deesra frowned at him.
Why haven't you said anything about this before?
The subject of enemy information raids hadn't come up before,
Tyr said.
I knew you'd be into the Bastion records. I suppose I was assuming you'd taken care of the Yaga Minor copies as well.
I haven't, but I can, Deesra said. I'll head out for Yaga Minor tonight.
That might not be a good idea,
Tierce said.
You going personally, I mean. The general in charge of the base knows Admiral Pellion fairly well, and with the Bastion library right here at hand, you really don't have a good excuse to examine his records.
Deesra frowned at him.
So who's going to go there? You?
I am the logical choice,
Tierce pointed out.
General Hestiv doesn't know me by either name or sight, and I can make up a story that won't link me to you. As long as Pellion's grand tour of the Empire doesn't drop him there the same time I am, there shouldn't be any problems.
Except how you're going to get into the special files section, Deesra said.
Tierce shrugged.
I'll use a copy of your decryption method, of course.
Deesra frowned a little harder.
You know, this is the second time you've tried to get that decrypt from me,
he pointed out.
One might wonder why you're so anxious to get hold of it.
Would you rather the rebels got to the Ka'amas document first?
Tierce countered.
What in the Empire are you so afraid of, anyway?
I'm not sure, Deesra said darkly. Perhaps that all you really want, that all you've ever wanted from the start, is to get your nose into those files. Maybe I'm thinking that once you've gotten whatever it is you're looking for, you'll vanish and leave us holding the bag.
Tierce smiled tightly.
A minute ago you were upset that I seemed to be taking over your grand project,
he pointed out.
Now you're worried I might suddenly desert it? Make up your mind.
You haven't answered my question, Deesra bit out. What is it you're looking for in those files?
I don't know,
Tyr said.
The Emperor had many secrets, some of which are bound to be useful to us. But I can't know which ones until I have a chance to look them over, can I?
If it's all that simple and above board, why didn't you suggest it in the first place? Deesra demanded. I could have let you look through the Bastion records.
Fine,
Tierce said.
Consider the request made. However, if I go to look at the files at Yaga Minor, I can take care of two problems at once, can't I?
Deesra grimaced.
except that if Tierce did his searching at Yaga Minor, he wouldn't be able to look over the guardsman's shoulder while he did it.
Across the desk, Flim stirred.
"We're all in this together, Your Excellency," he reminded Deesra. "Whatever secrets Major Tierce digs up, he can't possibly use them by himself as effectively as he can together with the two of us."
"Exactly,"
Tierce said, nodding.
"In fact, I'll go further. One of the files I'm hoping to find will only be useful in conjunction with the two of you."
So there was something specific he was after.
"And that mysterious secret is?"
Deesra prompted. Tierce shook his head.
"Sorry. I'll definitely need help from the two of you to utilize it. But it's possible the two of you won't need me. No offense. But at this point, I'd prefer to remain indispensable."
Deesra grimaced. But he could tell that this part of the conversation was now over. He'd pushed Tierce as far as the guardsman was willing to be pushed, and had learned all he was likely to learn. And that was it.
At least for now.
"You're still indispensable as the master tactician of our little group," Deesra reminded him, waving a hand in dismissal.
"But if this will make you feel a little safer..."
He broke off at a quiet beep from the desk.
"What's that?" Flim asked.
"My private comm," Deesra said, frowning as he opened a drawer and looked at the access code.
"What in the Empire?"
"You going to answer it?" Flim prompted.
"Stay out of sight," Deesra said curtly, keen for the connection.
"Both of you."
He straightened up and faced his desk display, arranging his expression into something hard and regal. The status report that had been on the display cleared and became a face.
"All right, Deesra,"
Captain Zothip snarled.
"Let's hear it. What in blazes is going on?"
"It's Your Excellency, Captain," Deesra corrected him. "And I was about to ask you the same question. You know the rules about contacting me this way?"
"Vader, take your rules. I want to know."
"You know the rules,"
Deesra repeated, the sheer iciness of his tone somehow silencing the other.
"This channel is never to be used except in case of emergency."
He lifted his eyebrows.
"Or are you trying to tell me something has happened that the Kavrloo pirates can't handle?"
"Oh, it's been handled. It cost me 2 men and 1 of my best bases, but it's been handled. What I want to know from you is how and why Luke Skywalker just happened to drop in for a visit."
Deesra frowned. "What are you talking about?"
"Don't twist me around, Deesra. Skywalker was a Kauron, asking about your precious clones. Got out of our Jedi trap, and we wound up having to blast and bust."
"I mourn with you in your loss. What does this have to do with me?"
"What doesn't it have to do with you? First you pull out all your clones, no explanation. And now, suddenly Skywalker drops in for a visit."
The pirate's eyes hardened.
"You know what I think? I think you decided you don't need us anymore, and pointed Skywalker our direction to try to close us down. What do you say to that?"
"I say I'm looking at a pirate chief who's lost his nerve. What in the Empire would I have to gain by eliminating the Kavrloo pirates? Even assuming I could pull off such a feat."
"You tell me! I hear Admiral Pelion's people have been sniffing around the boots of our financial associates on Munalinst and Borgo Prime. Maybe you're trying to burn your sky arches behind you before he connects us together."
Deesra snorted.
"Let me tell you something. Not only am I not worried about Admiral Pelion, neither you nor anyone else in the galaxy has any reason to worry about him either. Not for long, anyway."
"Really?"
Zothop said, scratching under his shaggy black beard.
I thought good Imperials didn't assassinate each other anymore.
He's not going to be killed, Deesa assured him with a smug smile. He'll simply stop being a threat. That's all. At the side of the desk, Tierce muttered something under his breath and snagged Deesra's data pad.
Yeah, sure, whatever. So then what was Skywalker doing here?
Deesra shrugged, watching Tierce out of the corner of his eye. The other seemed to be writing a message at furious speed.
Perhaps he identified you during that botched job at Iphigen, he suggested to Zothib. You said yourself that the ships that drove you away were a YT-1300 and an X-Wing. Solo and Skywalker?
Could be, I suppose,
the pirate conceded with ill grace.
He still knew I'd been using your clones.
Deesra waved a hand in dismissal.
He was hunting shoal darters, Zothib, trying to make a connection, any connection, between you and the Empire. He doesn't know anything.
Maybe nothing about you. But what about me? He's a Jedi Master, remember? He could have picked up all sorts of dirt from my men.
Then you'd better bury yourself somewhere for a while, hadn't you?
Deesra suggested, feeling his patience starting to shred around the edges.
He didn't have time for this.
Some place where big bad Jedi can't find you.
Zothub's face darkened.
Don't try to dismiss me like a child, Deesra,
he said, his voice rippling with soft menace.
Our partnership's been extremely profitable for both of us, but you don't want me as your enemy. Trust me on that.
That works both directions, Deesra countered.
Tierce had finished whatever he was writing and had stepped around behind the desk, holding the datapad just over the display where Deesra could read it.
Trust me on that, the Moff continued, leaning casually forward as he tried to talk and read at the same time. There's no reason to end our relationship over something this trivial.
Trivial? You call the loss of a major base trivial?
Besides, I have another job to offer you, Deesra said, leaning back in his seat again and throwing Tierce a faint smile.
Score another one for their master tactician.
If you're interested, that is.
Zothib studied Deesra's face suspiciously.
I'm listening.
In approximately 3 weeks, Admiral Pellion and the Chimera will be leaving Imperial space for a secret meeting at Pessetine, Deesra said. I want you to attack him there.
Zothib laughed, a single Ranfix-like bark.
Ha! Right, Deesra. Attack an Imperial Star Destroyer with a few Telgorn pacifiers and maybe a Kaloth battlecruiser or two. Sure, no trouble.
I don't mean attack with any intent of doing serious damage, Deesra said patiently. All that's necessary is for him to come under fire. You can do that, can't you?
I can do it, sure. Question is, why should I?
Because I'll pay you twice your usual fee for harassing New Republic shipping.
Deesra let his voice drop to a soft purr.
And because, if you do, the Kavriloop pirates will be first in line to reap the rewards when all of this is over.
You're expecting there to be enough rewards to be parceled out, are you?
More than you can possibly imagine, Deesra assured him.
Zothib snorted.
You'd be surprised how much I can imagine,
he said, but there was a thoughtful edge to his gaze now.
Okay, I'll run with this a while longer. Pessetine, you say?
Right. One other thing. I want whatever ships you send against the Chimera to be marked with Corellian insignia.
Do you now?
Zothib said, scratching under his beard again.
Any particular reason?
The same reason I don't care whether or not you actually inflict any damage on him, Deesra said. Why don't you see if you can figure it out for yourself?
I'll do that. In the meantime, you see if you can figure out how to deposit the fee into our account, all right?
Deesra smiled thinly.
A pleasure doing business with you, Captain Zothib.
As always, Moff Deesra. I'll be in touch.
The display blanked.
Through the proper channels next time, if you please,
Deesra muttered toward the empty screen, allowing himself to slump slightly in his seat. Conversations with Zothib always left him feeling drained.
At any rate, that should keep him off our backs for a while.
As well as performing a useful service for us,
Tears said, taking the datapad back and blanking it.
There's another military virtue for you, Flynn. Never throw away allies until you're absolutely sure you won't need them anymore.
We have similar rules in the Fringe, Flynn said dryly. Not so eloquently put, of course. What exactly was that all about?
What, Zothib's attack on Pelion? Deesra asked.
The attack itself, I understand, Flynn said. You're trying to make Pelion think the New Republic has rejected his peace offer and is ambushing him instead.
Deesra cocked an eyebrow at the con man.
Very good. You're learning. Though, of course, vision is always clearer in backsight.
You're too kind,
Flynn said, tilting his head slightly in a faintly mocking salute.
What I don't understand is why Corellian insignia instead of New Republic ones.
Because that would be too obvious,
Tears told him.
It would imply all of Coruscant had flatly rejected the idea of a meeting. Pelion knows they wouldn't do that, and would guess it was a setup.
This way it will look like it's just Bel Iblis, who's a Corellian, who is turning him down, Deesra added. Pretending they're Corellian defense ships should also help explain why there aren't any Star Cruisers or other major capital ships in the attack.
Right,
Tears said.
Also bear in mind that we don't want Pelion giving up entirely on this surrender idea. At least not yet. If Bel Iblis has rejected his advances without official sanction, then Pelion's next move would be to seek someone else to make his overtures to. That will take time, which plays into our hands. More importantly, it will also require him to leave Pessetine prematurely, even if enough of Major Vimel's message got through before he was captured at Morishim. Chances are Pelion and Bel Iblis will miss each other.
It should work quite well, Deesra said casually, carefully concealing his own surprise.
That last part hadn't even occurred to him until Tears brought it up, but he had no intention of letting either of the others know that.
Tears was entirely too self-assured as it was, and Flynn wasn't nearly respectful enough toward either of his superiors for Deesra's taste.
In the meantime, in Major Tears's words, our stew needs a little more stirring. Are we ready for the Bothawi riot yet?
If not, we're very close,
Tears said.
We'll use Navit's team, I think. They've been the most successful agitators.
And we definitely want this one to be memorable, Deesra agreed. I'll order them into position.
We should also start activating the rest of the sleeper groups,
Tears said.
There's no way to precisely plan our timetable, and we don't want them still asleep when we need them.
Yes, Deesra snorted gently. Especially considering that if the real Thrawn were in charge, he'd probably have had the whole operation timed down to the minute.
We'll just have to do the best we can,
Tears said,
and trust our enemies to fill in the gaps for us. Meanwhile, I'll get over to Yaga Minor to see what I can dig up.
Let's hope you find something useful, Flynn said, getting to his feet. One thing that still bothers me. What was Skywalker doing nosing around a Kavaloo pirate base?
as I told Zothip, trying to connect us to them, Deesra said. Don't worry, he won't be able to.
But...
Besides, it's irrelevant.
Tears cut him off.
Very soon now, a few clones and a grubby little pirate gang will be the least of the rebellion's worries.
Chapter 11. The door slid open, and Card stepped onto the wild card's bridge.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, he said. How are we doing?
Fine, Chief, Duncan said, half turning around in the helm seat to look at him.
We're almost to the Noskin system. Just a few more minutes.
Good.
Card took a step toward him, sending a quick look around at the other stations, and paused, frowning.
What are you doing up here, Hisishi?
He asked the young Tagorian female at the sensor station. She turned to face him.
Duncan asked me to take the station,
she said, her mewling Tagorian speech as purringly feline as her appearance.
He said it was time I took some more bridge practice.
Card looked at Duncan. The other was gazing studiously at his board again, his face in profile, but even so, Card could see the secret amusement bubbling there.
Yes, I suppose it is,
he said, taking a second look around the bridge at the other stations. O'Donnell in the co-pilot seat was wearing the same expression as Duncan. So was Pormphil at the engine monitor, though on his Carestian face it was a little harder to spot. Even Chin, who tended to be rather grandfatherly toward new recruits these days, was having to try hard not to smile.
"Have you done a status check against the baseline recently?"
he asked, looking back at Hasishi. The Tagorian's yellow eyes seemed to cloud over a little.
"No, chieftain. I will do one now, if you request it."
"Please," Card nodded. "The baseline data card is in the computer room."
"I obey,"
Hasishi said, uncoiling her lithe body from her seat. She padded across the bridge, her claws making little clicking sounds against the metal floor as she walked and exited.
"All right, gentlemen," Card said mildly as the door slid shut behind her. "Am I going to have to guess?"
"Oh, it's nothing much, Chief," Duncan said, radiating a thoroughly unconvincing innocence. "It's just that she's never been to Tarek's place before. I thought she'd get the best view if she was up here when we came out of hyperspace."
"Ah," Card said. "And you're curious to see how high she'd jump?"
"Well, yeah, maybe a little," Duncan admitted.
"We like to think of it as our full initiation into the crew,"
O'Donnell added helpfully.
"I see."
Card looked around at the others, all of them grinning openly now.
"I suppose it hasn't occurred to you that startling a Tagorian this way might be just the slightest bit dangerous?"
"Oh, come on, Captain. It's harmless fun," O'Donnell said. "Mara lets us do this when she's on the bridge."
"Anyway, Captain, these are a long tradition," Chin said. "Billy's folks surely cooked up something like it when you joined up with them, he?"
"Billy's people weren't nearly so creative," Card said dryly. "As for Mara, her excuse is that she wants to use the Force to examine how new crew members behave under stress."
"Sounds like a good reason to me," Duncan offered. "Better we check them out here than find out what they're made of when we're in the middle of a genuine crisis."
"You're rationalizing, of course," Card pointed out.
"Probably," Duncan agreed shamelessly. "Come on, Chief, give us a break. It's been deadly quiet around here lately."
"An enraged Tagorian would certainly break up the monotony,"
Card said, shaking his head. Still, horseplay aside, they did have a point. If Hasishi was going to become a permanent member of the Wild Card's crew,
they really did need to find out how she reacted when startled.
"Be it upon your own heads. I'll watch from over there."
He stepped over to the bulkhead beside Chin, where he had a good view of the sensor station. And as he did so, the door slid open, and Hasishi padded back in.
"I have the data.
I have the data card, Chieftain Card,"
she said, holding it up for his inspection.
"Good,"
Card confirmed, giving the label a quick check. Hasishi had a good grasp of spoken basic, but her Orabesh reading skills were still a little shaky.
"Go ahead and set it up."
"I obey."
She sat down at her console again, clawed hands tapping delicately at the controls.
"Here we go,"
Duncan said.
"Stand by sublight engines."
Gripping the levers, he eased them back. The mottled sky turned to star lines and collapsed to stars. And there, floating in the darkness directly ahead of them, was an Imperial Star Destroyer. Hasishi came half out of her seat, hissing something vicious-sounding in her language that Card didn't catch. Her mouth was stretched wide open, the fangs glistening whitely in the pale bridge lighting. Her fur stood stiffly out from her body, making her look half again as big as normal. And in her yellow eyes was a crazy fire.
"Star Destroyer, directly ahead!"
Duncan called out, as if someone on the bridge might somehow have missed it.
"Range 2 kilometers.
"Turbo laser battery swiveling toward us,"
O'Donnell put in.
"Porn fill?"
"Engines at full power,"
the Crestian said, his 8 cheek nostrils wheezing rhythmically.
"Picking up a transmission, Captain,"
Chin announced.
"Acknowledge it,"
Card said, watching Hasishi closely. She hadn't moved, but was still half-standing, staring at the dark bulk and glittering lights ahead.
"Are they activating any tractor beams?"
For about half a second, the bridge seemed to hold its collective breath. Then, with a quiet hiss, Hasishi sank back into her seat and began tapping keys on her control board.
"No tractor beams have yet been activated. The turbo laser batteries."
Her stiffened fur seemed to wilt a little as she tapped more keys.
"There is no power in them,"
she said, sounding confused.
"No, there is power in..."
She turned to face Card, her yellow eyes narrowing.
"There are 3 functional turbo laser batteries. No more."
"Good," Card said calmly. "That means we're in the right place. Always good to know that. Chin?"
"Yono waits, Captain,"
Chin said, smiling openly now as he tapped the comm key.
"He'd like to speak with you."
"Thank you," Card said. "Hello, Booster. How are things?"
"Never better, you old pirate!"
Booster Tarek's cheerful voice boomed from the bridge speaker.
"Welcome to the Errant Venture! You shopping today, or just breaking in a new crew member?"
Hasishi hissed softly, her fingers rubbing gently against the control board, but she said nothing.
"We're shopping," Card said. "For information, mostly."
"Are you really?"
Booster said in a tone that made Card picture him rubbing his hands together.
"Well, well, this is definitely my star shining day. You want to bring the wild card aboard, or should I send you a shuttle?"
"We'll come aboard if you have the space," Card said. "I'm not in the market for any hardware myself, but I imagine my people will want to browse."
"Well, come on in, then,"
Booster said cheerfully.
"Trader's Alley is open and ready for business, as are the rest of our little boutiques. Go ahead and take, Docking Bay 15. I'll have someone there to escort you up to the bridge after you've turned your people loose. Don't forget to remind them that Trader's Alley is a cash-only business."
"Of course," Card said. "I'll see you soon."
He motioned to Chin, and the other shut down the comm.
Take us in, Duncan, he said. You know how to get into the docking bays.
No problem,
Duncan said, getting busy at his board. At the sensor station, Hashishi stood up and turned to face Card.